Well, welcome. It's Tuesday, and I'm Mark Kaysen, and this is Showdown with Ray Hartman alongside. Ray, how are you?
I'm great now that I'm with you, Mark. I'm always good when I show up here.
There's no question. You know, the last time that we were here in the studio, we had actually some additional assistance with us. You know, that we're okay today just by ourselves.
Well, we're lonely.
Yeah.
Hopefully you've got some people call in.
Well, as has been pointed out here at the beginning of the show, I mean, I'm unusually tall, but...
You are. You are very tall. One of the taller people I know.
At least according to the screen here, so, yeah. Anyway, this is Tuesday, the 17th of September, and we're down to, what, 50 days, 49, something like that?
Who's counting? Seven weeks from today.
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
When we had our last conversation here, we were thinking about how Kamala Harris might do and what could happen and how things might change. And as it's turned out, it's probably the best circumstance that you could have imagined.
Better.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked her back in 2020, but she has stepped up in a remarkable way to the point where Republicans are very uncomfortable figuring out, you know, they keep saying, well, she's making too much sense now. She's got to be a radical. You know, she's really what she was 4 years ago.
Right.
We all change. We all a little bit different. And she's, you know, I know you can't say this on the air when you're a candidate. Say, well, I've evolved in my views on things because I'm in a different role. I saw things differently. But I think in her case, you know, she's right where she needs to be. Tim Walz is right where he needs to be, Tim Walz. And frankly, I'm pretty excited about the top of the ticket. And I do believe they're going to carry I'm running against Ann Wagner in the 2nd Congressional District. And I believe the Harris-Walz ticket will carry the 2nd District. And I also think I will.
And you know, I said last time that if Kamala caught on, that I thought that you had an excellent chance to win, but then again, we couldn't have possibly imagined that she would light the country on fire with enthusiasm the way she has. And as a result, I think you have a better chance than I even imagined the first time.
And I don't want to overstate my chance. It's going to be a close election.
Sure.
But I'm running against a 6-term incumbent who started the race with a lot of money in the bank. But I'm running to change the way we do our politics. You know, people know me. I've had the privilege of being in people's living rooms in our community in every inch of the 2nd District
for
37 years.
Yeah. No, people do. Let's say they do know you very well.
And the big difference, I tell people this. If you're looking for someone who's hating on Ann Wagner, hates her, you got the wrong candidate.
Right.
She and I both grew up in St. Louis County. We both went to Mizzou. I went there 10 years ahead of her, so I like to borrow the Ronald Reagan's line that for political purposes, I will not hold her youth and inexperience against her.
Right.
But we root for the same sports teams, but there are a couple of big areas of difference between us. One is on the issues, which we can talk about. The other, and it's really more important, I think, to voters, is we have a philosophical difference about what it means to be a member of Congress. From my media background, I know you've spent a little time in the media. There's an essential built-in assumption for people like us that your job is to report to the bosses, the people, the electorate. And the way you do that is by being accessible to those people at all times, having town halls, having them come to you maybe when you're not ready, you know, and comfortable about it, and also communicating them through the media to them, that you take very seriously your responsibility to serve the electorate and also to be there for them. And that's the biggest difference. She's been there 12 years. She's never had a debate. She's never had a true town hall. And to my knowledge, I was talking to someone in the media a couple of days ago being interviewed. I don't think she's ever done a news conference, just a regular open news conference. I shouldn't say never, but I can't remember the last one where she just sat down and said, bring in cameras. When I'm elected, you know, partly because I'm a ham, you know, I don't always get it a chance to show up on shows like this one, but not as good as this. But I seriously like being available. And every time I come back from the district, if there's anything going on at all in Congress, I'm going to have a news availability so we can talk about it and people can be informed. They may like it. And I've said before, I give everybody in the media in this town now has my cell. They can call me anytime they want for breaking news. And that doesn't just mean, you know, on good days. I mean, our side's going to have a bad day between now and the election. I don't care if they call me and get a reaction, well, why did this happen? You've got to be willing, I think, to put yourself out there. And I think as a member of Congress, that's the one big difference we have. And, of course, obviously we have difference on reproductive freedom and things. But it's more about just having somebody, they know me, and they know I'm not going away.
And the thing that you bring out here so well, that lady's invisible. So, you know, you don't have to hate her. And in fact, there's nothing to hate about her. In fact, I've had a few pictures taken with her because, you know, you go around to different events and she's very friendly that way. But she's totally unavailable when it comes to the public. I can say, when I say unavailable, I've never seen her. The only place I've ever seen her is when you're dealing with political events.
Right.
And then she's willing to take a few questions. She's very nice that way. Mm-hmm. But I'm in the second district. Yeah. I have never seen her. And the other side is anybody that doesn't think that you would be available at a moment's notice would be kidding themselves. Because they've seen you for all these years, decades.
And hopefully they're seeing me in this stretch run. I did. You can find me at the Afton Parade next Saturday. I was at Green Tree, which is, I probably shouldn't say this, but it's my favorite one just because it's where we took our kids every year in Kirkwood. I walked that one this past Saturday, Afton next Saturday. Manchester was the previous Saturday. I love that. And I'm out there. It's so much fun for me to meet people, and people are very nice about the ones and who watched me for all these years on Donnybrook. And I think Donnybrook, even though we yelled a lot and talked over each other, the fact is you saw people who disagreed about the issues but weren't personal toward each other. And at the end of the day, we were friends. And really, in the case of the last dozen or so, 15 years with the crew, we've had kind of stability until I left, and of course they immediately started billing it as the new improved Donnybrook, which I thought was hurtful. I thought that was you didn't have to do that, but we have a camaraderie had, we still do have on Donnybrook. I'm not going back. I planned on winning, but I'm not going back to journalism. Right. But my point is that that's what we need. We need people. My aspiration, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, I think I did, but I may not have on the air. There's something called the Problem Solvers Caucus in Washington. There's a lot of caucuses.
Sure.
Besides just committees, there's like caucuses. Some of them are partisan, some of them are not. This is one called the Problem Solvers. It's 32, when it's filled, it's 32 Republicans, 32 Democrats. And they basically are committed to moderate, trying to find conciliation, trying to find common ground. And they kind of work together for solutions away from the sound bites. And that's my aspiration. They have to accept you, but hopefully they would. And that's what I'm not many people run to be on that because I don't, I'm not, you know, I no problem with my philosophical views, whether it's being for, you know, to restore Roe v. Wade protection, which I think is the number one priority. But also things like and restore an assault weapons ban, which is another priority. And I realize sometimes people don't like that. I'm not going to back off of core ideas. But within that context, you can work together with people you disagree and come to reasonable middle ground on many issues. And that's really what I'm about.
No, I think that's not only true and obviously true because we've all had a chance to watch you. Yeah. On all the programs, we know what you've said. You've been out here, okay? So I think people will believe that. I think that a lot of this is going to come down to the presidential race, which is pulling numbers for lots of people. For example, when I saw in the last couple of days that Iowa had gone from minus 18 just a couple months ago to minus 4
really?
For Kamala. Minus 4.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's an amazing number for Iowa.
Well, I saw a number that today, and again, let's say something about the polls. It's interesting, Mark. People say two things to me about polls. I hear it all the time. The first is, I don't trust them. I don't believe them. I don't trust them. And then the second is how you're doing in your polls.
Right.
And so I'm used to that. But I will, and ours, by the way, are, you know, showing we have a very competitive race.
Sure.
We've been in the high fours behind 4.6, whatever, yeah. Behind Ann Wagner. And that's that. I'd rather be
highly respectable.
Well, it's in the ball game, but the key thing polling doesn't measure, and this is our theory of the case, if you will, is it doesn't measure enthusiasm, it doesn't measure turnout. And to your point, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are going to be turning out a lot of votes, but also having reproductive freedom on a ballot in a red state. I think it's key that people understand this. It's not just that we have a constitutional amendment number 3 that I think we'll probably get 60% of the vote.
Sure.
I really do. But you got to understand, when it's the only recourse for voters, whether it's women or men who believe in just what Roe v. Wade provided, just basic choice, you know, not all this nonsense about, you know, infanticide, just Roe v. Wade, what it was always, you know, protection of the right to abortion up to viability, and that's it. And people want that. I mean, in our district, it's probably 2-1. And so when, you know, obviously that's a big issue for us and one that we're going to, you know, certainly make an issue out of. But in terms of this election coming up, the key is people turning out. And in other red states, Kansas was 59%. Kansas, as red as Missouri. Ohio. When it was almost 57, and even Kentucky, which is arguably yes. redder than Missouri, yes. was 53.
Yes.
And that's the percentages when they were faced with keeping putting pro-choice protection in. Now, we have a different thing, which is even more compelling, which is to end our Constitutional Amendment 3 would put a stop to possibly the worst abortion law in the country, meaning if we don't pass Amendment 3, people have to understand this is not hyperbole. It's not extremism or hysteria. The law as it sits in Missouri is written in a way that anyone who has that abortion is simply not legal after 6 weeks, full stop, no exceptions. And all these, what people say, oh, it's a horror story. No, if some woman, God forbid, and it doesn't have to be just kids. We talk about kids and their uncles and stuff. Right. But it can be anybody. Any woman who's assaulted in this state, under the law, if we're going to enforce the law that's in existence, has to bear a rapist child. Period. That's it. That isn't, and that's not an opinion. It's not some kind of a scare tactic. It is the law. And really, our laws mirror Alabama's. And Alabama's are the laws that, when properly applied by a Supreme Court, found that IVF clinics are liable for any embryo that dies. I mean, and it's like, no, everybody like, well, for example, my opponent, Ann Wagner, she'll say, oh, I'm for IVF and I'm for contraception. But actually, under Missouri's law, you can be for whatever you want, but it isn't, it's not going to be legal. I mean, you know, the freezing or certainly what we call destroying an embryo is not going to be permissible under the law if it's enforced. And so it's not extremism. And that's why so many people are going to come out and vote. But even if it does get passed, which I think we all pretty much expect, Constitution Amendment 3, we've seen what the legislature does. They did it way back under concealed carry. They did it about a puppy mills. They did it about Medicaid expansion. The voters made a very clear statement, and then the next session they just pretended like they didn't hear it. It's a little harder for them to do on this one with a constitutional amendment, but I really think it's important, even after we pass this, that the country, that the women, it's nothing radical, just that we restore the same protection women had from 1973 to 2022.
And the reason that you can imagine that women are going to vote in a very smart way here is because they also do understand that this is not just about somebody having an abortion. It's clearly, and over the country, the numbers are starting to really show up in a big way. And that's these women that maybe get to 20 weeks and have their water break, and they're on their way to sepsis. They're going to die, and doctors are afraid to treat them because somebody's going to say, you're trying to perform an abortion.
Well, and let's be clear. Under the law in Missouri, they will go to jail.
Sure.
And one of the consequences we've already seen in our state, tragically, is a lot of qualified OBGYNs and others have fled. They don't want, and you can't really blame them. Most people didn't go into medical school, and it's a wonderful, thank you for doing it. All the people, they're devoted their lives to helping others and treating others. They didn't go, whether they're an OBGYN or a nurse or a doctor of any kind, they didn't go into that profession expecting to dodge the law, expecting to maybe be in prison for simply doing your job. And we're not kidding around in Missouri. There are criminal penalties for doctors. And people have to understand this is not, it's maybe we've cried wolf. Everybody's always worked up about this issue or that. This is real in Missouri. They will put you in prison. And, we saw there was a woman, I think yesterday they had a report in Georgia. Someone died in the hospital because they didn't get there soon enough because they weren't able to access care when they needed it. And Kamala Harris made an eloquent presentation of that at the debate, pointing out that, when Donald Trump said everybody wanted, Roe v. Wade.
Well, isn't that silly?
Boy, was he. That was. I remember tweeting that night. I could watch this all night. But Kamala Harris made a wonderful point about how they didn't want to bleed out in their cars. They didn't want to, most of us, there's an overwhelming percentage of us that agree that IVF is a wonderful advance in medicine and a wonderful salvation for people who can't have families. And to be able to do that's a wonderful thing. We all pro-life about that. And the problem is that the way the far right has written laws in places like Missouri, I'm sorry, they're saying, and Nikki Haley actually during the campaign was one of the only people to say that quiet part out loud. She said, I believe embryos are people. Okay. If right. you believe that, and she got away with it in a way because it says, how can you then, anybody, I've never gone through IVF treatments and stuff, but I know people have, and you need multiple embryos, when you're going to this wonderful treatment and you can't, what are you going to do with these other, if you assume all embryos are human, it gets you down a path that no one wants to go, and it's not okay to have all these have all this rhetoric about life but say, oh, I'm okay. I'll make exceptions for this or that. People need to understand all this talk of, and it is extremism, no one is that I know, certainly not me, advocating anything other than women having control over their bodies before the viability of a fetus.
Yeah. That's it. And the other problem that they've got, and Donald will not stop saying it, and that is what you just commented on, that the business of Democrats killing their children after they're born. But he's double and tripled down on it.
And it's just so disgusting. It's just disgusting. And even in the days when Ann Wagner was chairperson of the Republican Party right the end of the century, right around 2000, right around 2000, they had two big priorities. One of them, and that she doesn't talk about much, well, one of them in particular was right to work. Doesn't like to talk about that one so much because people have been pretty clear about that. And then the other one was it was a big time of talking about partial birth abortion, which is terrible, sounds terrible and everything. And I remember doing a column, Mark, about this at the RFT, and I did some research and discovered, because I thought, I didn't know anything about it. It sounded bad. Now, one of the people who defended it, of course, was Donald Trump on Howard Stern's show, was saying he was for that. But the point is, I didn't know about it, and it turns out that in the entire history of Missouri, with this being the top priority of the Republicans at the time, there had never been.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say never.
Been,
yeah.
There had never been a partial, and to my knowledge, there may not have been. And the only time it was ever really needed, and I don't want to get out of grease, but was people who lost a baby, who lost their baby, and it, the fetus was either dead or going to be born dead, basically. It was dead. And they wanted to give it a burial. That was sure. For. And I mean, my God, and we're making them into like some kind of monsters. And it doesn't have to be this way. There is something. There was a group called Common Ground. There are ways we can agree on making adoption a better option for people and helping those to choose to put up a baby for adoption, giving them tax credits to support to help that path. There's a lot of places in common. We can talk about ways to prevent unwanted pregnancies. And go through the whole walk with that, which is the best. You know, Bill Clinton used to say that abortion ought to be safe and rare. We could work toward those kinds of solutions. We don't have to just, you know, get in our warring camps about this. And that's what I talk about being in the problem solvers. You got to reach out to, you can't vilify the other side. It's not we're good, they're evil. But on this point, we cannot have the government. We're not going to, I want to say it, we're not going back. We do not want to go back to the days where women are dying. I mean, and suffering. It's just, it's unspeakable.
Yeah. So, okay, this is going to be the number one driver of people right. to the polls because I think women right. are not playing.
Right.
So that's...
And men, by the way. It's not just women. Yeah. It's pro-choice men. I mean, there's a lot of us that feel as strongly, even though we're not directly affected as men... There's a lot, I know I feel that as a father of a daughter, and even if I wasn't a father of a daughter, frankly, you know, there's a lot of us that are voting, too, because of this.
Yeah. But yeah. the women are going to be big.
Sure.
So, you know, that's just a fact.
Right.
And at the same time, the energy in the Democratic Party, and I know Republicans, many who are friends of mine and who support Donald Trump, and they deny that it even exists. Mm-hmm. But you can deny it all you want, but the energy in the Democratic Party is just unbelievable levels.
Yeah, it is now, and we just got, you know, we can't take it for granted. It's 7 weeks, and as much as I feel like I have a real good chance, I do think it's going to be a close election, and I got to work my tail off. I mean, I'm not taking, I don't have any sense that I'm like, you know, somehow are the favorite all of a sudden, because I'm certainly, you run against a six-term incumbent, you're the underdog. It's my first race. But I think that, and I need to get people who are willing to, if you don't mind me mentioning Gray Hartman for Congress.com.
No, don't be
we
silly.
Need
Go
people
yeah.
Who are willing first to volunteer. Obviously, we love people contribute to the campaign.
Sure.
But we also need people who are going to go out on election day and hold up signs and at the polling places and
just,
you know,
making phone calls
and making phone
calls, which are very valuable.
Yeah, you know, we're doing all that. And we've got a pretty good, I've got a wonderful campaign manager, Amber Binge, her name is. And she's actually Dr. Amber Binge. She's got her doctorate of all things in organizational something. And
okay.
if anybody needed to go to a doctor for organization, it was me.
Yeah.
But we got a great team. We really do. And it took a minute. I mean, I just decided to do this. It was just me in March 15th. And I'm pretty proud, not of myself, but of the team that has been put together. And I think we really are poised to pull an upset. It's going to take a lot of work. And it's going to be close. And as you point out, I mean, there's a lot of things out of our hands. We don't know how the next seven weeks are going to go. At the national level, if they go anything like the last 4 to 6, I think this could be a very successful year for the Democratic Party and really successful for the Republicans, in that maybe having worked in the Republican Party for one of the great public servants of all time in Missouri, Kit Bond. I was a speechwriter, and Kit really was one. I mean, even though I ended up maybe not agreeing with him all the time on Senate issues and stuff, he was a great governor. He really was. He was the last good governor on the Republican side.
Well, there used to be Republicans that acted Kit, like human beings.
Well, and Kit was a transformational governor in his first term, mostly before I got there. All the progress stopped when I got there in 75. But I know all the things that he did working with a Democratic legislature. And by the way, I think Crystal Quaid's about the same age kid is was then. You know, he was, I think, 37, 30. I don't know how old she is exactly, but roughly the same age. And Crystal, while she's very, she's not Kit Bond, I mean, very different politics today. Crystal, I was talking about this last night at a gathering. I said, you know, Crystal really could be transformational. I don't think people realize, because she would be working with a Republican governor. He was working for a Republican legislature. He had to work with a Democratic legislature. Divided government works the best when you have both parties sharing power instead of either party with all the power. I mean, if you look at the first half of the 20th century where there were virtually no Republicans in Missouri, that didn't work out well.
Yeah.
And,
well, I was just...
and now with no Democrats having power statewide, that ain't working out well. And I'm telling you, I don't want to digress too much, but Crystal Quaid would be an amazing governor because not only would she have to work with the Republicans, but they'd have to work with her. And she's already shown as minority leader, she knows what she's doing. And she'd just be amazing as a governor. I'm excited about her. I don't, everybody thinks, well, you know, this, that, and the other thing. I'm telling you, with the right stuff happening at the top of the ticket, Crystal has so much energy. I probably run into her a dozen times, 15 times, maybe campaigning in the last several months in St. Louis. She's running statewide.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, I'm really impressed with how hard she works. And I, so, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that can happen in 7 weeks. And, Nobody's 7 weeks is a long time in politics. And I'm just, like I say, all I got to do is work every day. That's all I'm doing. And we do need folks out there, to the extent they're willing to. And we don't just need Democrats. I mean, I think independents, I worked on the Republican side. I know you and I both have a lot of Republican friends. The Republican Party has been disfigured by Donald Trump. I mean, it's literally been disfigured. And it could still rebound as a great political party, as an important political party
after this year.
After, if it can get, if it can get Trumpism,
get rid of that,
calm down, and get away from nativism and white nationalism and all these kinds of influences that used to be just the fringe. I mean, both parties have always had a fringe, and of one kind or another. And it's not always equal. I mean, it's not always whataboutism or something. But in this case, I mean, I can't tell. Well, you know how many Republicans you and I know who are decent people, and they really don't, for whatever reason, don't like what our side, Democratic side, has to bring on various issues.
But they don't want Donald Trump.
But they don't want this. They don't want the chaos, and they don't want the hatred, and they don't want the grievance and the negativity, and he can't help himself. I mean,
he can't stop.
Well, because I think he's got, I think personally, I don't think you have to, there's been enough people speak out about it in the professionally, his narcissism, we call it narcissistic personality disorder, whatever it is pretty much on display. I mean, it's not, if you look at how quickly he became unraveled in that debate, when all he had to do in that debate from his perspective, and not mine or yours, but his, was talk about the three things. The economy, immigration, and his view that Kamala Harris had changed.
He can't do it.
And he literally, when she simply and accurately, by the way, pointed out that people were getting bored and leaving his rallies, he literally couldn't control himself. And I think people out there who are maybe undecided ought to ask themselves if he – and I realize – he's probably going to win Missouri no matter what you and I say. But the fact is, although I will tell you, the last poll I saw said was 10%, which is way closer than it was when he ran. I think it was 17 when he ran.
If I was down to four, right. You can imagine
Missouri's
the potential.
Could be in single digits. And if it is, that's going to make a big difference in certainly in my race and others like it. But people got to ask yourself, if Kamala Harris could trigger him that easily, what do you think a guy that ran the KGB could do? Vladimir Putin, if you talk about whatever you think about Russia, all that, I got to tell you, and of course, I was one of the people that actually read the Mueller report. I don't think it was nothing then. But having said that, you really wonder if people understand that this is a real problem. And again, I think one of the things that's going to possibly happen as this election gets closer is a lot of those folks are just going to stay home. Yeah. I mean, if they don't feel like they can vote for our side, they're not going to vote. You know, and I we'll have to see though. I'm not here to. I have to train myself not to be a journalist anymore. I don't have any. I'm not handicapped in this race. Yeah. I just got to get out and work.
But the funny thing is, which I am not surprised at all, is that in this studio, you have an amazing situation because we are probably the only two people in the state of Missouri who have ever read 448 pages of the Mueller report. Yeah, right. And you know, I love talking about the fact, right, which nobody will ever be able to go to anymore because they totally destroyed it so badly. Bill Barr. But the thing about it is, when I read about the 144 illegal meetings between the Russians and people in Trump's campaign, mm-hmm, and everybody says there's nothing there. Well, of course there's something there. Mm-hmm. And you know, but again, nobody's ever going to touch that ever again because Barr destroyed it.
I should be more disciplined to even talk about it.
I know.
I'm saying, look, my race is pretty simple. I laid it out early. I mean, the biggest part of my race, for those who are listening out there, whether they agree with me or not, and then, you know, and Donnybrook, for all these years, you know, we were blessed to have such a nice audience, such a large audience, and, you know, 37 years is a bit of time on a dial.
A bit.
And people would come up to me, and still do, actually, in Schnucks, Deerbergs, wherever, and it's almost like a some kind of, you know, disclaimer that's like on my forehead or something, they're reading, which is, I don't always agree with you, or I usually don't agree with you, but I like your show, or like you, whatever they say that's nice. And it's always a nice compliment preceded with kind of a obligatory disclaimer, you know, that I don't really agree with you. And of course, I got to where I said, well, I don't agree with me either all the time. But that to me is the highest compliment I get. And for voters, you know, hopefully it'll be interesting to see in my first electoral effort that people need to understand they don't necessarily have to agree with me on everything we talk about to understand the importance of having someone who will listen to them and who will be there for them and who cares about the folks in the district. And you're not just electing up or down votes on everything. You are electing someone to represent the district.
Okay, I'm going to do a little business here real quick.
Absolutely.
And then we'll get right back here. In fact, I know exactly what I want to throw out to you, which is just funny. But in any event, one thing that we both agree on here, and that is especially after you accompanied me down the street to Wendy's.
That place is great.
Good food.
Great food.
Yeah.
Just great atmosphere.
Great. Absolutely.
I'm not part of your
show. No,
I mean it. It was really nice. I'd never been there before. And it's got just a great atmosphere and food.
Did you have some iced tea that day or no?
Yes.
Okay, because I did, and I was surprised myself at how great that iced tea is. But yeah, it's excellent. Now, the thing is, people love wings. Are you a wing?
I like wings, yeah.
Yeah, see, and I'm not.
I didn't have wings this time. I had ribs.
I've never been with the wings, but I definitely do love the baby back ribs.
That's what I said. I had that. Yeah,
absolutely.
They're amazing.
And I love onion rings, which, you know, they've got those. And you know, they've got also the patty melts, which, you know, people generally fill with onions, you know. But look, they've just got great food. Mm-hmm. They've got smoked meats. They've got salads, pizza, you name it. It's just great food, great atmosphere. Ben, who I don't think, was he there when?
Yes.
Was he?
Ben,
okay.
Yeah.
So you got a chance.
And I got really good service. But now, in fairness, that was because I was you. No, I mean, anybody right. goes, you're going to get service. I suspect it's good all the time.
It's
right?
good.
Okay, good.
It's very good.
All right, just mention your name. Yeah, I'm going to get good service.
Absolutely.
You're going to get good service.
And the other thing is, if you just go down the road to Defiance, Missouri, they've got a new one that's there as well.
Is it open now?
Yeah, it is open, $29.99, South Highway 94. That's Defiance. And
it's in my district. It's in the second district.
It's all Wendy's and it's all good. Okay.
Nice.
So now, the next place is really back in the city, and that's Jules on Hampton, and that's at 4506 Hampton. And if you're interested in jewelry, Al and his son, AJ, are just terrific people. Everybody loves to go there. Just talk to them. They're fun people, but there's obviously a purpose. They buy and sell jewelry and coins and good prices. And if you like them, you're going to trust that they do a good job, and they've been there a long time. So, you know, they are a great place to buy jewelry, cases and cases filled with jewelry. They're also designers, and on top of it all, they fix watches.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you know, you go in there, spend a long time. By the time you're through, you notice your watch isn't working anymore, and they'll fix that on the way out. So that is Jewels on Hampton, 4506 Hampton. And then, of course, we've got the St. Louis Suit Company. And the St. Louis Suit Company in Clayton is unbelievable. And I know we discussed last time the ties, which, you know, the incredible ties. And here again, you know, you look at this tie. If I tell you it's $5, it's $5. And everybody says to me, you got to be kidding. Can't be $5. Where'd you say that place was? So everybody's interested in the $5 ties, and that's one of them. They've got suits, they've got shoes, they've got, well, you know what's coming, which is the cold weather, so overcoats, you know. And I begged people to buy overcoats when it was 100 degrees every day, and it looked like months before it got to winter. But, hey, it's still good prices and great overcoats. And, you know, if you're getting married, that's another thing. They are terrific with wedding attire, and everybody knows that's the St. Louis Suit Company with wedding attire. They've been there for 30 years on the corner of Forsyth and Central, right down from the old World News, which, isn't that a shame?
It is a shame. It's right down from my old office, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a great location. Yeah, it really is.
It really is. 30 years there. They're good. They're great. Okay, so my question is, did you wake up this weekend to the same thing I did, which was Donald Trump screaming into the camera, they're eating the dogs?
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, how's this possible? Where does this come from? This is a gift.
Yeah, it is. And Laura Loomer, who's...
Is another gift.
Is a gift. And... if you haven't Googled Laura, you know, you just, my view is that she is, you know, we have a lot of good surrogates, but probably, you know, on the Democratic side,
sure,
we really have a lot of great surrogates, but she has to be counted among the pretty effective ones. I don't want to rank her, but she is an effective surrogate.
Yeah, for us.
And for Laura, the more we can get Laura Loomer on camera, and I mean, I'm not going to go into it, but if you just, for example, someone like Lindsey Graham made the mistake of thinking he could call her out. I don't know if you saw it. I'll just let you folks go on Twitter and look at Laura Loomer and just search Laura Loomer and Lindsey Graham and look what got happened to Lindsey for spoken up. And it's just like, it's really, you know, you have to ask yourself if you're one of those folks, and there aren't that many, but there's some, who are truly undecided, the one thing you want in a president, let's just say you're not ideologically like we are, or ideological, and you're, you know, maybe you don't like Democrats or whatever, you know, fine. You got to ask yourself about judgment, who you hire, who you surround yourself with. And the people around Donald Trump right now are very concerning to the normal people that used to be around him. And people forget that almost 100% of the people who testified against Donald Trump during the January 6th hearings in Congress were Republican. Not only Republicans.
Yes, they were.
But they were his employees.
Sure.
I mean, they're the ones that saw stuff. They're the witnesses. I don't know if there were any Democratic witnesses because they were talking about his conduct on January 6th and everything to do with January 6th leading up to it. And the witnesses, including William Barr, were people who worked for him.
Yeah, who are also the same people doing Project 2025.
Well, and I'm not wild about those folks, but they look like so good next to the people that are talking. You know, if you look at you know, a second Donald Trump presidency, God forbid, would be people like Laura Loomer and Steve Bannon and
Stephen Miller.
And, I mean, he was around, but he'd have a much more prominent role. And there would be very few, if any, guardrails. And you just don't even think about that. But as I say, I got to focus on my race with Ann Wagner.
No,
and I'm saying.
But who does Ann Wagner support? I mean, I can't pull. It's got to be Trump.
She gave the most. What's interesting about her, people ask, when I, particularly if I'm on a conservative radio show, I don't, you're conservative, but not quite as conservative as some. But when I'm on conservative radio, I talk, I say, well, there's two words to come to mind. In fact, in audiences, I don't like name calling. I really don't. You know that. I'm not a name caller. There's two words I use to describe Donald Trump. One of them's reprehensible, and the other's predator. I think those are two good words. They're the two Ann Wagner used on October 7th of 2020, demanding, after the day after Access Hollywood broke, that he leave the ticket. She invoked her work on sex trafficking, which I applaud. She did a real good job on that issue. Invoking that work, she said she could no longer support Trump and that Mike Pence should carry the standard. And, of course, it took actually your friend and mine, it was Jamie Elman, on his show just about 3 weeks later, I think 20 days later, she pretended basically she acted like, oh, of course she supports Trump, but it didn't really even – you know, wasn't even presented as a change. She just, oh, yeah, I support him. You know, and I mean, Jamie, you know, carried that well. And but the bottom line is that since then, she has, it's not just she voted with him because that's just partisan, but in February, I think it was this year, she gave him the most enthusiastic, and I think there were still other Republicans on the in the room, you know, in the ticket. She gave him an enthusiastic and kept saying, he's the only candidate that can do this. I mean, you'd have thought he was just, you know, her idol. And, I mean, what happened?
Yeah.
If he was have you seen in 4 years that the rest – I'm talking about 2000 – I'm sorry, did I say 2020? I meant 2016. It was 2016.
Okay.
Because it's when she was running against – he was running against Hillary the first time. And I said that wrong. But I mean, we've seen this guy almost every day, sadly, for 8 years. What did you see? Maybe, I don't know, did you see a side of him we haven't? I mean, it's not like we haven't all had Donald Trump nightmare. I mean, he's in our daily lives for the last 8 years. And it was right before Access Hollywood, 2016. Let me correct that. But I mean, what'd you see? And so now, you know, but again, it's not just about him. It's really... it's about the Republican Party needs to get back to where it had some solutions.
Well, it's about governance.
It's about governance.
Yeah.
I'll give you one that I'm going to do a video on later today, I think. And I don't know if you probably haven't seen it because it just happened. It just came out on Politico and I haven't, ProPublica had a story yesterday that I thought was interesting, that the Biden administration wants new regulations that will require more mental health treatment by, I'm not ready to go into all the details, but what I understood from the story is it's going to make it more, there will be regulations requiring the insurance companies to up their game when it comes to providing mental health.
Sure.
Coverage, which is something we should all be able to agree upon, right? Well, the Republicans have already come out. I don't believe Ann has said anything yet, but that the Republicans, quota, were saying this is too much. This isn't the way to do this. You're overregulating the insurance industry, and it's like this is the ultimate underheading of governance, bluff calling time. It's like, wait a minute. After every mass shooting, everyone, you say, we don't. It's too soon to talk, and we don't want to talk about guns. Let's talk about mental health. Let's do something about mental health. Now, here's the Biden administration coming along saying, here's something we can do. We can require make mental health coverage more available to people by requiring the insurance companies not to basically fail to provide it. And what happens? Oh, well, we're not that crazy about mental health. So what is it you're for to treat mental health? Because clearly, if you know people that have experienced, their families or them have experienced mental health questions, coverage is a real problem.
Yeah. Insurance coverage. But I don't know anybody.
But the Republicans, you know, and I'll be interesting, I'm going to ask my opponent
sure.
to join in and say, yeah, if you really mean supporting mental health, let's require the insurance companies to do a better job of providing insurance so that treatment is available. And if God willing, if any of these would be you know, mass murders could get help instead of getting a military weapon, maybe we would have fewer of them.
Yeah, but I don't know anybody in the Republican Party, and I know a lot mm-hmm. of people, that talks about governance at all. Oh, yeah. I mean, they don't deal with issues. They call right. Kamala names.
Right.
They talk about, you know, Joe Biden somehow tricking the American people into, you know, allowing him to be president when he was supposedly, right. you know, disabled. But here's the thing about disabled Joe Biden. Disabled Joe Biden has passed more serious legislation that has impacted in a positive way people's lives in this country right. than almost anybody we can remember,
right.
Except for Franklin Roosevelt. I mean, right. this guy has done, and what you're talking about, this is just more of the same right. coming from the Democratic Party. Right. And you know, with people like you elected in the House right. of Representatives, this is the key, then you can come in and vote for things and actually affect the lives of people.
Right. You're right. And again, my theory of the case there is not to presume that I have all the answers. I think one of the things I learned this the hard way from Donnybrook, there's no worse feeling than to state what you think and then realize about halfway, you know, after about a minute after you said it, that somebody else is thinking something maybe smarter than you thought. and it happened all the time with Ann Keefe. McCullough and I both, when he had Ann Keefe on the show all those years, she was the wisest person I ever saw. And she and I fortunately didn't disagree on a lot of stuff. But when we did, I thought, oh, no. I'd say something and Keefe would give me that look. She'd be sitting right next to me. And I'm like, ruh-roh. Yeah. And I almost
well,
never wanted
her. Well, she was a smart
her.
And nice lady.
Well, she was wonderful, eh? And she passed away just about five, a very dear friend of mine, of course. And really a mentor of mine. But there were times that I'd say something, because I was pretty, you know, pretty out of control sometimes. And I'd say something, and she, I just look at the, oh, no. And what I learned from that, and including with McCullough, if I'd get in an argument, Bill and I are obviously brothers. I mean, we worked together for 37 years. But I used to always tell myself, don't get in an argument on an issue that involves crime. Just don't do it with Bill, because he's going to pulverize you. And almost every time I would get on a crime-related topic, I just learned to just let him try it. What's humbling about that, but it's important, is to understand none of us is as smart as we think we are. You've got to understand that, and I really mean this. I'm well-read on the issues. I pride myself in that. But I want to go to Washington and really sit down with the other side. Now, some people on the other side that you've seen, the ones that you see most on TV are probably not worth sitting down with, because they just, you know, they just want to.
Well, they don't want to hear.
They don't want to solve anything. Yeah. It's kind of like when Trump wanted to, you know, we had a good example of bipartisanship was the border bill that was written by conservative Republicans in the Senate. And nobody, including Ann Wagner, she wasn't screaming about it when Trump killed it. You know, and it was, I mean, here they are talking about this alleged invasion, which I think is overstated, but, and some of the horrible rhetoric about the blood of, you know.
Language.
This fiction that they're emptying prisons and mental institutions. Could you, and this, I'm on the media, I keep waiting for somebody, could you name one? Could you name one such institution? Name one.
Yeah, well,
There isn't any. So my point is, there is a problem at the border. I do think one of the things we need is stronger border control. I mean, I happen to believe in that. But you don't have to accept, you know, this horrible rhetoric, this horrible dehumanizing stuff. And there was a pretty good solution. Democrats weren't wild about it, but there was a lot of give and take on the border. And that's what you have to do. You can't act like your side is always right about everything. And you got to understand that it's a big country of almost 350 million people. And normal thinking Republicans do have ways of looking at some of the same issues as Democrats differently, or independents. And the best solutions are when you sit down and figure them out together.
Yeah,
I really mean that.
Yeah.
I think
the problem also is getting facts straight.
Yeah.
And you know, as an example, just not that this makes any sense, but this business going on in Ohio right now, which in fact is the dogs, is closing down schools.
Yeah.
threats everywhere against everybody. And one of the stories that, they use is this picture that they've got of some guy who happens to be black, so they say he's Haitian, walking down the street with a couple of dead geese. And the thing about the dead geese is, number one, it didn't happen in Springfield, Ohio. This picture was somewhere else. Right. And the truth is that he picked up these dead geese off the street in order to get them out of the street. Mm-hmm. You know, so the facts mean something, and establishing facts is not simple.
Yeah, and that's there's one who was it in Columbia when they had that, or Kansas City with at the parade they had a horrible thing. And immediately they had a go-to Muslim guy who they blamed for it. And he was the same guy that they had blamed for like three other things. He was like, apparently, and of course he didn't exist. I don't even know if he existed, or if he did, he did one crime once. And they had him every time there was something like a shooting or something.
Trotted him out.
He was the guy, you know, and it's like, what? You know, we really are in a fact-free, you know, environment in a lot of these cases. And it's not just, I'm not just saying it's, well, all I'm saying is that there is room. There really is room, folks, to listen to each other. You know, there is. And there are, not every issue is partisan.
Yeah. And here's another thing. As a journalist, which you are,
and
very respected one, the thing about Trump running around the country, which he's done a tremendous job of harming the mainstream media organizations, you know, people laugh when you say the New York Times, which is shocking, really, because the New York Times is the best. Yeah. You know, 1858 until now, you got to believe in the New York Times. When they make a mistake, they say they made a mistake. Yeah. If they've got somebody who does something wrong, they fire people like that.
Right.
So, you know, as a journalist, actually are somebody that could really help to restore what we really need, which is trust in people who tell stories that are true.
Well, understand, I spent a lot of time criticizing the mainstream media as a publisher of an alternative Newsweek over all those years. And I think I have good relationships with people in the media. But the one thing I tell them all, and I have to say it's been pretty well received, is here's my cell number. No, for real.
Yeah.
I don't happen to have a communication. I have a really great team. I mentioned our team. But the one exception where I'm a little unconventional is I'm my own communications director, in that I don't need to have a filter. And so I'm telling people, if there's breaking news that about Congress that might impact our district or our community, then by all means call me and get a real-time reaction. And it's like really it's almost a radical thing to do.
Right. Well, it is.
But it isn't. It's the job.
You are qualified.
Anybody. I mean, the point is any member of Congress should be qualified to answer questions.
Should be.
Now, I'm not saying they shouldn't have communications director. Yeah. I'm sure if I get elected or when I get elected, I will have a basic press person. But even then, you know, my view is that the key to it, if you want to tell whether a public official is truly, in my mind, accountable and accessible, see how many times they're available when the news isn't good for them. In other words, sure, right now, if somebody wants to ask me about the debate or ask me about dogs and cats being eaten by Haitian immigrants, sure, that's an easy one. I mean, you know, it's like you kind of like don't even know what to say.
Right.
But, and you know, it's just like, please keep on talking about it, JD or whoever's talking about it. But the point is that it's the real measure of somebody is when things don't go well for your side, and they don't always go well for your team. If I'm elected and Kamala Harris, God willing, is our president, there's going to be days when we have a bad day. If something happened, a gaffe or a bad policy or something goes wrong, that's when you got to be there. You got to be there and say, look, you know, oh, you know, turn on the mics, ask your questions. And I don't think I am very comfortable. And anybody out there is in an organization wants to host a town hall in the next 7 weeks, let me know. And I don't care if it's out. You know, I spent a lot of time in Jefferson County. I'm sorry, Franklin County. Jefferson is not in my district. Franklin County is, I don't think most people realize it's wholly in our district. Franklin County is the only district entirely in the second district now. And despite that, if you're in St. Louis County, which a lot of your listeners and viewers are, 71% of the votes cast in this past primary from the two parties were in St. Louis County. So even though the district is rather large geographically, St. Louis County still matters. But I love Franklin County. I think Washington's one of the most fun. I just think it's a great, it's Americana. I mean, we have other places like Kirkwood and many other communities in our town that are. But I love Washington. I've always liked Washington, Missouri. It's just a great blend of rural and, but it's really, in a lot of ways, it is part of the St. Louis area.
Did you grow up here?
Yeah, I fought my way off the streets of Creve-Coeur.
Okay,
We were tough kids. We were really rugged, hanging out in dark carports. We were tough kids. But I'm out there, and I will say that the district is, there's a lot of different kind of folks in the district, but people in Washington have been very nice and very receptive, and they kind of want the same thing. They want somebody who's listening to them and there, and, everybody's not, a one or two issue person. A lot of people just want somebody that's going to be available and accessible to them.
I think that's a major part of it. And I think most people.
It's the biggest difference we have.
Yeah. Right? And I think that most people recognize that you would be that way. Even if you didn't say it, I think they would believe it.
Yeah. And again, you do not have. I keep coming back to it because people try to bait me into saying these things about Ann Wagner, like she doesn't, she's somehow evil or not does have best. Of course, she's got good intentions, but she does philosophically or whatever. I don't want to put motives in. She's just empirically not there in the ways I'm talking. She just can't argue. Oh no, I do a lot of press conferences.
No,
I do a lot of public town. She's made the point that she did. Virtual town. When that's come up, she said, well, she's done during COVID, she did virtual. I said, there's a difference between a town hall and a Zoom call. Okay. A Zoom call is never a town hall. I'm sorry. You can call it a Zoom call town hall,
right?
But there's a moderator who can shut your mic off. You're not there physically looking at people and in the room with people. You're in on Zoom or you're on a word, whatever. And no, that's not the same thing. I'm talking about when I'm elected, there'll be town halls where people can show up. They don't have, probably more often than not, they're not going to be people who even like me who show up and they want to talk about when I voted to assault weapons ban. And I got to be able to look them in the eye and say, this is why I did it. And that to me is the big part of being in Congress. I mean, I think it is. I really mean that. And again, I come back to it over and over. The one thing, because people see on TV all the time and RFT, our editorials, and they kind of assume you think you're a know-it-all. But that's just not me. I mean, I can't tell you how many times over 37 years I'd say something and go, ruh-roh. That didn't come out right.
Right.
And it's fine. You don't do it, take it lightly. But you got to have a certain humility about your ideas. And there's a lot of smart people in Congress on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah. Okay, so here we're at the end of the show. Yeah. The numbers are great, so we're all happy about that. But let's talk about the numbers that people can call to reach you to give you some help.
Well, there really are phone numbers, but there are certainly the best way to reach me is to go to rayhartmanforcongress.com. And if you got your pen out there, everybody out there can. I probably shouldn't give my cell phone out, but I will give out my, just because it's not a great idea, but I'll give out my email, which is ray@rayhartmanforcongress.com. That goes right to me. And Hartman's got two N's and four is spelled out F-O-R, so it's a long email. It's ray@rayhartmanforcongress.com. Anybody listening wants to have a conversation starting with, and most likely it'll be a phone call, but I had an event today that I met somebody who's a mental health professional who started out by saying, look, I'm in the middle. I don't like Kamala Harris and I don't like Donald Trump. I said, fine. And this person sat down and I learned more in 15 minutes talking to him about some of the mental health issues that are out there. Not in addition to what I told you about that's at ProPublica. And it was, you know, I learn a lot when I shut up a little
well,
bit.
Well, I think we're all going to learn a lot with you even more before we get to the end of this election. Mm-hmm. I know you'll come back. This is on behalf of the St. Louis Soup Company and Wendy's and Jules on Hampton, Ray Hartman alongside. I'm Mark Kaysen. This is Showdown. Good night.